Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Michelle Paver.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
We are here on the occasion of your publication day for Thin Air.
Yes.
Which I would describe as a classic gothic ghost story.
Yes, I would be very happy with that description. Yeah, that's what I was aiming to write when I wrote it.
Okay, and I'm also going to go and say that it has all the classic requirements in the setup of a scary story. You have a group of people who are in an isolated area.
Yes, yes.
So they're removed.
Yes, yes.
No way out.
Yes.
There are tensions within the group.
Yes.
There was information that they thought was sort of fixed.
Yes.
And in the middle they find out, no, it wasn't.
It wasn't, yes.
Things are not what they
seem. Not what they seem, correct, yes.
So all of your classic elements. And you set it in the 1930s. Tell me more about the story in general.
Yes. Well, it's set in 1935, India, twilight of the British Empire, but the golden age of mountaineering. So think sort of George Mallory, pith helmets, columns of porters. And my hero, Stephen, is on an expedition to the Himalayas with four other Brits. They're following in the footsteps of a previous expedition, which ended in tragedy. And they're out to climb a mountain, Kanchenjunga, third highest mountain in the world, biggest killer of them all. Stephen, the hero, he's desperate to climb the mountain. As you say, there are tensions in the group. His brother is also desperate to be the first to the top. But as they climb higher, things start to happen that Stephen can't explain. And then he finds himself alone on the mountain. Only he isn't alone. But is what's happening to him, is that just because of the altitude, the thin air, or is the mountain haunted?
And the mountain is almost a character in itself. The mountain is mercurial and quixotic and mysterious, as well as an incredibly harsh environment. And I don't ever want to find myself in an ice cave, ever.
No, I totally agree about the ice caves, actually. You're right about the character. I mean, you know, I had to choose the right mountain, and pretty soon it had to be Kanchenjunga. It's a frightening mountain. It stands on its own at the eastern end of the Himalayas. And the 1930s mountaineers, well, it killed a lot of them, for a start.
And those it's killed survived, more than Everest or K2.
Well, it had at that time,
at
yeah.
That time. Okay.
And those who'd survived were scared of it. I mean, one of the toughest who ever climbed, he said in the 30s, he said, you know, the times he spent on Kanchenjunga were the most nerve-wracking he'd ever experienced. You know, you have to go with a mountain like that.
Mm. Yes. Also, okay, so that's the other classic bit of,
yes,
you know, a scary story.
Yes.
Is the warning beforehand.
Yes, yes, that is classic.
Yes, the sign outside the elevator, take the stairs. For
yes,
God's sakes,
yes,
take the stairs.
The muttering peasants. And
yes,
and that sort of
exactly,
thing.
Which we have. We have all of our classic elements.
We do, and I think, and you're right to pick up on that, because I think it is a traditional ghost story, and part of the fun, I think, is that the hero, Stephen, he doesn't know he's in a ghost story, but the reader does. So there's that element of, you know, it's behind you. And so you do want the elements that are there, that we expect, but in a, I hope, original way. I mean, I don't, to my knowledge, not many people have set a full-length ghost story at 23,000 feet, you know, on a very, very savage and very real mountain. So it's playing with the traditional elements, but then also in a, I hope, a real setting.
Mm.
But a very atmospheric one.
Yes, very atmospheric. You also have, in the Sherpas, you have their traditions and suspicions.
Yes.
There's a dog who's, you know, who we always think the animal sense, you
yes,
know, of sensing other things
yes,
around us.
Yes.
What do ghost stories do for us?
Well, you know, that is the question, isn't it? Why do we like ghost stories? And people do ask me this. I don't spend that much time thinking about it. I think that the usual answer is, well, you know, it enables you to confront very difficult questions. You know, what happens to us after we die, that sort of thing, our place in the universe. But from the comfort of our own sofa or bed, so we can tell ourselves it's just a ghost story. Also, I think readers like strong emotion, and fear is one of the strongest of all. So those are perhaps why we like them. Frankly, as a writer, I don't care. It really doesn't matter. I know I love ghost stories. My only interest really is how do I write the story? How do I scare the reader? And that was the aim of writing Thin Air. It was to scare the reader. There are incidental pleasures. Thank you. Well, I hope I did.
You did.
Excellent. I'm glad to hear it. Well, I scared myself when I was writing it. But interestingly, I mean, they're very technical and difficult to write because it's a difficult thing to do, to scare a reader. But all I can say is, yes, I do love ghost stories, but I don't even know myself why I love them.
And because the setting is, as you say, unique, relative unique for a ghost story, it is also brought to life extremely well by you. And there's a lot of technical information that you had to know.
Yes.
In order to, you know, filter out what I didn't need to know,
exactly.
But to give me the right amount of detail.
Yeah.
I don't plan. You know, after reading this, I used
Wise
to really
woman.
Want to go to Everest Base Camp. No more. Thank you for curing me of that.
Oh, sorry.
But you've done some mountaineering. Yeah. You did research for this book.
Well, yes, I did. I mean, because the technical reason is that to tell a ghost story, you need to create an atmosphere that is realistic so that the reader will then believe in the ghost. And yes, I read all the mountaineering memoirs about Kanchenjunga at the time, fine. But there comes a point when you have to go there. And I confess, I'm not a mountaineer. I did not climb Kanchenjunga, but I did trek for 8 days through the foothills towards it. And that sounds a bit gentler than it was. We walked from about 6,000 feet high to about just under 15,000 feet high. So, you know, altitude sickness is starting to kick in and that sort of thing.
Did you experience any
disorientation? Sadly not. I really wanted to. I mean, I just don't get it. It's not that I'm fitter than anybody else. It's just I just got a little bit of breathlessness and that was all. Mm. But a companion, a member of our little group, about eight of us with some porters, she did. She suffered really quite badly. And I'm afraid ruthlessly I did
exploit her experience.
Thank you, Polly. But it was very, very useful. But, yeah, we were quite worried about her, but then she got better. But that actually being there's no substitute for it. You know, I mean, there were experiences that I worked into the story, as when the yak lost one of his horns in a fight with another yak and he bled all over our gear. I mean, the yak was fine, the gear wasn't. You know, that sort of little detail. But then the sheer how frightening it is when you're in a tent after a storm and a blizzard. You wake up in the middle of the night, you're on your own, as I was, and, you know, you can't see anything, and then you hear footsteps crunching towards you through the snow. You know, that I didn't really realise how frightening it could be, and I had written the first few drafts before I went there, and then completely rewrote it afterwards. But I'm glad you mentioned about all the sort of technical details as well, because, you know, this is why I think I went through so many drafts with this book, because I didn't want it to be full of that stuff. You know, mountains are complicated. I didn't want the reader to be thinking, now, hang about, where does this ridge go and all that kind of simplify, you know, just strip it down. And that took a long time.
It is also an environment where the key to their survival is trusting each other.
Yes, yes.
And they don't.
Yes.
And, you know, there's sibling rivalry.
Mm, mm.
And it's also an incredibly harsh environment, and you can't just like, okay, you're like, I want to get off, you know, stop the roller coaster, I'm done.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
It strikes me as the descent is almost worse than the ascent.
Well, that's what they always say. I think 80% of accidents happen on the descent, and so there's all this sort of thing. And then as you climb higher, and the thin air starts to kick in. Your mind, I mean, I did experience that I was my mind was moving more slowly, and it was taking longer to do simple things, just sort of tying your shoelaces and things. So, I mean, that was at sort of 15,000 feet. So imagining what it's like, you know, 22,000 feet, when from all the memoirs and talking to people that our guide had certainly climbed higher than me, you know, it just takes a very long time. And small things assume big proportions. If you drop your mittens and you can't find them again, you know, you're kippered. So that's
by hands.
Yeah, that's right. So it's really, really, and you may not. I mean, there's a famous example of someone on the summit of Annapurna did just that, dropped his mittens, and was so hypoxic he didn't remember that he had his spare socks in his pack. He could have put them on his hands, but he didn't. You know, you're not thinking clearly, and that's what I love and I enjoyed about writing Thin Air is what's happening to him. The thin air and the exposure and isolation because he's on his own, or is it really a ghost?
And that's doubly destabilizing for him,
yes.
Because also as a medical man, he's the doctor, he's both diagnosing and sticking his head in the sand in a way about his condition, and it's so frightening internally, let alone what's going on externally, when you are an unreliable witness even to yourself.
Oh, that's beautifully put. But yes, absolutely, because he's very self-aware. He is a doctor, as you say. He's the expedition medic. And he's observing himself. And he tests himself at one point. You know, is this altitude sickness? And he does various tests that you do. And he can't work it out. And he can't trust himself. And as he says at one point, I think, you know, okay, if these are hallucinations, how does that make it better? Because that means my own mind is betraying me. It's a kind of possession. So it's quite frightening, I hope.
Yes, very. It kept me up. But it's also one of the things that hinders communication between them is because it's also, especially in the 1930s, was an extremely macho, male-dominated sport.
Yes.
However, there were women.
Well, there were. I think it's fair to say they're on the fringes of the story.
Yes.
Because
as they were on the fringes of, you know,
of society and life and pretty much everything. But we do sort of come across the odd mention of, I mean, that the fact that Stephen and his brother Kitts climb at all is down to their great aunt who brought them up, Aunt Ruth. And she enjoyed mountaineering because, of course, you know, he's climbing in the Himalayas. The book's set in the Himalayas, but there was the whole alpine mountaineering scene, and Aunt Ruth was a proponent of that. And there's also a lovely, well, I enjoyed the mention of a Victorian climber, lady climber, who left her visiting card in a jam jar on top of one of the lesser peaks in the Himalayas. That's true. She was American, actually. She was named Fanny Workman, and I read her.
I'm having it at home on the top of a mountain.
She was extraordinary. I mean, she gave her natives, as she called them, a very hard time, it has to be said. I mean, a lot of them did. But, I mean, she did. She jolly well climbed and, you know, stuck a jam jar on top with a visiting card. That was incredible. But they were tough. They were tough. The women who did climb had to be really tough.
Do you have that sense of, because as you say, you don't know why you like ghost stories.
Yeah.
But, and the appeal of the peak.
Summit fever, as it's been called, yes. I've never really felt that to the extent of wanting to go through the privations that they do to get up to, you know, 28,000 feet or whatever. I mean, I love hiking, and I've done hiking in the Andes and, as I say, in the Himalayas. I can certainly understand the appeal of mountains, which is partly why I wrote the book. It was to get at, you know, what is it about mountains that attracts certain people? I have to say, you know, mountaineers as a species, they are. The species is fraught with many weird characters, let's put it that way. I mean, reading the memoirs, you know, you have to be a certain kind of person
kind of nut.
Well, there's an element of insanity in it. I think that's right. And I freely borrowed from the memoirs in creating the characters. You know, I mean, there were people who woke their entire retinue of natives with an alpine horn every morning, you know. And they did take their dog up the mountain sometimes. I couldn't believe it. I wasn't going to include a dog. But then this guy, Paul Bauer, he took a dog to 24,000 feet on Kanchenjunga. You know?
Amazing.
And what kind of nut would dig out ice caves at 19,000 feet, you know, big enough to take six people? But they did.
That I could not You know, I don't know, even like getting an MRI.
No, I know. But it is a bit like that.
Yes,
you know,
it's like this tunnel of ice that could crush you on top of a mountain.
Absolutely. And I have been in naturally made ice caves. And you really do have that feeling. I was one in Alaska just a few months ago, and you can hear the glacier moving on top of you,
groaning away.
Yeah, and bits fall off, and you think, I'd better get out of here. You know, it's and the claustrophobia is something else. But you know, as a writer, when I found this in the memoirs, you think, oh, this is a gift.
Yeah,
because if I made it up, people wouldn't believe me.
Mm. Yeah. So and. Prior to, you've written another ghost story or thriller, Dark Matter.
Yes.
But prior to that, you were writing children's fiction.
That's right. Not such a stretch, actually, because it was set, it was Chronicles of Ancient Darkness. The first one was Wolf Brother, set in Stone Age Northern Europe. So there's a lot of mythology.
And cold.
Yeah, I am attracted to the cold, I have to say. That was set in, yes, Northern Europe. So, point me in the direction of the Arctic and I'm happy. Absolutely. And then after I finished that, I'd always wanted to write a ghost story. And so Dark Matter actually arose, which was the first ghost story, arose from some of the research I'd done for the Stone Age books. I'd been up Spitsberg, and well, I call it Spitsberg, and it's Svalbard, you know, these islands sort of halfway between Norway and the North Pole. And, you know, it was the extremes of sunlight in the in the summer and then total darkness in the winter and lots of ice. So in a sense, thin air is a sort of companion piece to dark matter. With dark matter, we had extreme latitude, you know, really far north. And in thin air, we have extreme altitude.
What's next? Plumbing the depths?
Plumbing the depths. No, I really, you know, I never intended to write another ghost story. They are so difficult to write. I'd love to write one, but I need to wait till I've got a good idea. And by sheer chance, a few years ago, I happened to have a condition called a frozen shoulder. Mm-hmm. If anyone's listening to this has one, you have my sympathy. It's horrible, and it's not life-threatening, but it keeps you awake at night and all. It's very painful. And, you know, one night I couldn't sleep, and I just sort of thought, sod this, am I allowed to say that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to just read a few books. And I scooped up some books from my bookshelf, and one of them was a mountaineering memoir. And that's what gave me the idea. So, you know, who knows?
Well, that's I'm always on the hunt for the silver lining to the clouds.
Yeah.
So the cloud of the frozen shelter brought us thin air. So thanks for the sacrifice.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Michelle Paver.
It's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Excellent. Let's see.
Yes.